Great. Do we have any questions before I start? So the reason I'm showing this schedule slide is we are done with 6 weeks, and I am out of my comfort zone. In the sense, from here on, essentially, I mean, up until now, everything I thought, I more or less knew 98% of everything that's been done. Okay, from here onwards, the percentage keeps monotonically falling. Okay, so that's what graduate courses are supposed to be. So you should actually, I'm hoping you would thank me for getting you so fast to the edge of my knowledge, so that the rest of the semester is going to be stuff that I, you know, if I, the stuff that's already been done, I can only teach you. But you know, as in a graduate level course, you also want to know, you know, where are the things that are still, what are the parts that are still not completely clear. Okay, to put a good spin on it, essentially, I got you to the edge of my knowledge very quickly in 6 weeks. And then the rest of the semester, you know, we're going to be very interesting topics, obviously, but keep your antenna up even more, you know, be more skeptical than you were before, and I'm likely to be wrong, and, you know, if there are questions, then I'll go and look it up, okay. So, essentially, we looked at the classical planning model up until now, more or less, right? I mean, so we sort of thought of it as instantaneous actions, deterministic dynamics, static worlds, fully observable. Okay, that's where most of the work has been focused, and that's where we know how to push the search, how to do the heuristics, and so on and so forth. Okay, so we already done that. Everything we learned in this, we would use it, you know, especially things like how to organize search, how to use the heuristics. We would start with the points we knew and extend it to the newer planning problems. Okay. But one of the interesting things, of course, is as you go forward, even like the semantics of what it means to have actions, what it means to have plans, you know, that we have taken for granted for 6 weeks is going to change now. Okay, if you have actions with durations, it turns out there are all sorts of interesting questions. Whereas if it's just an action is a point, then, you know, you have before action, after action, that's it. Okay. Anyway, so we will start talking, you know, for the rest of the weeks, we'll be talking about, the first thing we'll do is remove the requirement that actions are instantaneous. Okay, and in fact, we will remove, so that means that the actions are now going to be durative. Okay, we will also at the same time basically bring time into planning. Okay, one of the interesting things is clocks didn't exist until now. Okay, we could not say things, I mean, we could only say make something true by the end of the plan, okay? But if you wanted to say something like make something true by the middle of the plan, how do you say it? In classical planning, there was no way of saying it, right? But you could have goals. You could say, you know, get me milk at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then wake me up, you know, at 6:30 in the morning. So there is a clock that's progressing, even, if, you know, that you don't get to control. Okay, so once you bring in time, you bring it in two ways, both in terms of the clock and in terms of the fact that the actions have durations. Okay, that's what we'll be talking about for most of the time, you know, for this week and probably part of next week. And that's a very interesting extension, you'll see. But what hasn't changed when we do this is we still are thinking of deterministic duration, deterministic dynamics. We'll assume that it's still deterministic dynamics, it's fully observable. Okay, and the one question, of course, is that is it static or dynamic? Since I have said there is a clock which I don't have control over, okay, it turns out that you can, for example, talk about exogenous events. You can actually say that certain things will happen during your execution. Okay, so, I mean, for some weird reason, the thing that I think of when I think of exogenous events as we speak to right now is how many of you have seen Back to the Future? So Back to the Future, the final plan that this guy makes up is based on an exogenous event. He knows that the clock tower is going to be struck. at a particular time by lightning. Okay, and so he makes an entire plan which, using the interaction of the electricity flowing, he can then take up. Okay, so the rest of it is deterministic dynamics, but you do have exogenous events and you can use it for your advantage. You can also avoid getting stuck by meteors and so on and so forth. Okay, so in a way, the static aspect is changing a little because you can talk about exogenous events. Observability is fully observable still right now. Okay, that's where we are. Okay, so what we're going to do in bringing metric temporal planning, as I said, is like we bring clock to it and we bring duration to action. Okay, and it turns out these are essentially orthogonal extensions. You can have one, you can actually have clock and not have durative actions, for example. Okay, so you could actually start talking about clock in the context of classical planning. Okay, where the only problem, of course, then is if the actions don't have durations, how did you go from one time to other? In terms of the action execution itself, you are not advancing the clock. Okay. At any rate, so I want you to think in terms of what are the changes that come in because there is a clock, and what are the changes that come in because the actions themselves have durations. Okay. Those are two issues that we'll look at. If you have clock, as I pointed out, you can talk about exogenous events. Right, things that appear, that occur, that you have no control over, you can say that it will happen at 12:05 a.m. 12:05 a.m. Right. So that's something you can talk about. You can talk about deadline goals. The whole notion of deadlines are based on there being a clock that you don't get to control. Okay. We could not talk about deadline goals until now, basically. Okay. We could talk about. We could, for example, in TL plan sort of preferences, you know, if you consider TL plan language as a goal specification language, you could talk about there should be sequences of states that you go through such that in the first state this following is true, then the following is true, then the following is true. But how much distance is there between those states, you don't care. Okay? Right? You know, once you have actual time, you can actually say all the things that you said in the TL plan sort of semantics, TL plan sort of languages, but you also get to say deadlines. You must satisfy a particular, you must achieve a condition by a certain time. Okay, that you can talk about. And then you can also talk about durative goals. That means a certain condition must be held true over a period of time. Over a period of time. Okay, in a way, it's sort of like, you know, you could think of it almost as if you think of a primitive model of time in the classical planning, which is zeroth instant, first instant, second instant, third instant, the end of the plan, right? If you think in that, you could say that, for example, between the fourth and ninth instant, something must continue to be true. But unfortunately, the instants are being defined by your plan. And so it's not likely to be the case that the outsiders would have goals about instant defined in terms of your plan. So that's why clock is important, because clock is sort of common between you and them. Okay, so you could also have these goals. And so in fact, now notice that you can talk about different kinds of problems now. You have deadline goals, you have durative goals, and you have exogenous events that you want to either use or get around. Okay, yes.
Can those overlap with each other?
What? Yes, so what happens? I don't know. I mean, you're saying I may want two things to be true by a particular time. Yeah, that's possible.
And for actions, can we like execute different actions at the same time? Like
yeah, so that's we'll talk about that in a minute. You know, so one of the issues, of course, is what is the semantics of concurrent execution of actions? When are actions allowed to be executed together? But before that, first of all, let's think about even a single action. Understand a single action first and then understand how actions go together. But those are important issues. We have to worry about them. Okay, so that's for just the time, just for the clock. In terms of the durations of actions, okay, first of all, we start by noticing that duration, some actions have durations. Okay, so a particular action is not going to just take instant, it won't get done instantaneously, but it will take certain amount of time. Okay, now, obviously the question is this going to be a deterministic duration? That is, do you know before you come start the action how long the action is going to take? Okay, if you still believe in deterministic dynamics, then you must know. So if your domain is still assuming deterministic dynamics, then you must know exactly how much time this action is going to take. Okay, now, and if there is uncertainty about the duration, then that sort of pushes you into non-deterministic and stochastic dynamics. It's a different kind of uncertainty. Just as you can have uncertainty in terms of effects, you can also have uncertainty about how long an action might take. Okay, so we will assume that we won't talk about uncertain durations. So we have deterministic durations. But what's interesting is there are actions for which you can decide how much duration they're going to take. You can plan such that the action will have that much duration. So for example, you know, filling up a car, right? I mean, you can fill up half tank or full tank. If you do half tank, you take less time. If you do full tank, you do more time. So the point is, even when the durations are deterministic, you might be able to choose how much duration the action is going to take. But if you do that, that's a little harder than just a single durative action. So the simplest is a single duration for each action. The other is, you know, and this action basically can have a sort of a dynamic duration that the planner gets to pick as part of the planning. And then the hardest is uncertain duration, where, you know, apart from whatever the planner makes the decisions, there is a certain amount of uncertainty as to when the action will actually end. Okay? Now, irrespective of this, whatever the way the durations come for the actions, you now have actions previously used to take preconditions and give effects. That was our model. Again, by the way, now we just go back all the way to the primitive action models, and we are extending them to have durations. Now, one question, of course, is what does it mean to have hierarchical task networks in this kind of temporal actions? That's a sort of an ill-understood problem. There's been some little work in hierarchical task networks written over temporal actions, but not too much. Okay, so right now we are just talking about basically primitive actions which have duration. Okay, that means they can take preconditions and they can give effects. Previously, there is only one place where they can take preconditions, before the action, and they can give effects at the end of the action. But now it's all over the place, right? I mean, there is a duration for the action. The action can give may require preconditions at different points during the action, may give effects at different points during the action. Furthermore, it might require preconditions over subintervals of the duration, right? Okay, so those are all the issues that you're going to talk about. So when are preconditions needed? Are they needed, first of all, at a single point or over a duration? That's an issue. And, you know, all of these can be either seen as bugs or features. I mean, these are bugs in the sense that they're going to increase the work you have to do in writing a good planner. Okay, they're features in the sense you are now actually able to model more interesting dynamics. Okay, so you actually can talk about preconditions being required at single point, but that single point can be in the beginning or 4 units into the, you know, execution of the action or at the end of the action. Okay, and similarly effects, you can have effects in the beginning, effects at the end. And then furthermore, for the preconditions, you can have it over a duration. Okay, so that's preconditions and effects. Now, the other interesting thing, I mean, there's a bunch of things that sort of become obvious is, for example, previously an action, it was impossible to talk about an action which says both P and not P as its effects. You know, you could write them, but there is no semantics to it. You know, if an action, you know, has effect P and effect not P, then it's not well defined as to what it actually is doing. It's no longer, in a deterministic sense. Whereas you can talk about an action changing the same fluent multiple times during its overall execution. It makes P true, and then after 10 seconds it makes it false, another 10 seconds later it makes it true, another 10 seconds later it makes it false. That's quite possible. Okay, so that you can model that kind of action. Now, one default, of course, we'll see, of course, this sort of provides you a large number of things. You can talk about where the preconditions can hold and where the effects can hold. And in general, these are all the places where they can hold. But you can start putting extension, you can start putting restrictions on them. So in fact, one issue, and I'll get to it in a minute, is if you were to think of STRIPS actions, as actions with a very small duration, that's it, okay? Then where are their preconditions supposed to be holding? Where are their effects supposedly holding? How would you model STRIPS actions from the point of view of durative action? Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute, but think about it in the background. I'm sorry, what did I do? Okay. Now, of course, the other interesting thing is the durative actions bring a point, kind of a more important meaning to this whole notion of parallelism and concurrency. Okay. Previously, we essentially said a solution for a classical plan is always a sequence of actions. It's just a sequence of actions. Okay. And if you remember the refinement plan semantics, now what happens in there is every partial plan is just a stand-in for a set of sequences, set of action sequences. So what you think of as a partially ordered plan really is just a constraint notation for a set of action sequences. Okay, but now, so the parallelism didn't have much of a meaning in classical planning. Here you can actually talk about actions must occur concurrently for the problem to even work, for the problem to even be solved. For example, you read this in the paper, right? That the matchstick problem. So you want to go in your cellar, go down your basement, and go to the washing machine or something and put on the switch. Now the basement is dark, so you want to kind of strike a match, hold the match while you're walking until you reach the switch and then put on the switch. So this has to be concurrent. You must do it in such a way that the light is there while you're doing the walking action. Okay? And so there is no way in which you can actually do this sequentially. So sometimes actions must be concurrent for the plan to even be correct. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay? So in general, because concurrency is a direct part of the plan, you can actually talk not just about how many actions there are there in the plan, but what's the distance between the beginning of the plan to the end of the plan where all the actions in the plan have executed. Okay? And that would be called make span. So make span of a plan is the minimum time required to go from the beginning of the plan to the end of its execution. Okay? Now, it's obvious that if you have, let's say, 10 actions, right, with different durations, okay, the make span has to be greater than or equal to the largest duration action. Because at least one action must, even if everything is being done parallelly, the largest action at least has to get done. So the make span is greater than d1 to max of d1 to d10. And then if the make span is equal to sum of those durations, then it is a sequential plan. Okay? And if it is greater than the sum of durations, if it's greater than or equal to, then it's a sequential plan. If it's equal, then it's basically one action is starting right after the other action ends. And if it is greater, then that means there is slack between one action's end to another action's beginning. Definitely slack, okay? And then in general, if make span is less than the sum, then there is concurrency somewhere in the plan. That means at least two actions must be done together. That's the only way it can happen, okay? So one interesting issue, of course, is that you might ask for a plan that not only has the least number of actions, which is something that we used to think about, are the lowest amount of overall cost, which you could, which basically if each action has a different cost, you add up all the action costs, that would be the total cost. But you now also can ask for a plan that has the lowest make span. Right? Because inequality, you know, from the point of view of different plans, I might say, well, this plan, I mean, in fact, in the travel planning, we have this. You know, if you have two different travel plans, one flight plan is cheaper, but it requires 3 days layover somewhere, and another one is costlier, and it goes nonstop. Okay? So you could actually have make span as one of the optimization criteria, the quality criteria. Okay. One interesting thing, of course, that discussion brings up is whether you would need concurrency only as a quality metric, or whether you would need concurrency even to solve the problem. Okay, that means if, in fact, we'll talk about in a minute, but in general, you could have solutions if there are problems for which all the solutions ultimately will require concurrency. Okay, that's different from problems where some solutions require, can be sequential, but you might make them concurrent to reduce the total time. And these are sort of different issues. One is, you know, you're improving quality, another, you can't actually solve the problem unless you allow concurrency. Now, one important thing in terms of temporal planning is actually that you could talk about problems which require concurrency. Okay, I mean, you may or may not need them in your domain, but that's one thing that's possible to do. Okay. The other thing, actually, which you know, I probably should. Let me see. This is actually not directly related to time, but it, you know, the issue is. Actually, let me skip over this. Resources, we might come back and handle them separately. Let's just talk about metric time and duration for now, okay? Resources will make it things even more complex. So there is a PDL 2.1 standard that you looked at, that, you know, looked at the reference manual. And so what does it do? It allows the durations. It has both static and dynamic durations. Dynamic are choosable durations. You get to decide how much duration the action is going to take, okay? At the execution time, there is no uncertainty. That's the difference. Okay, at the planning time, you may decide how much time this action is going to take, and you plan for it. And then at the execution time, there is no uncertainty. Okay, and then you can have preconditions. The one thing from the point of the discussion that we had here is the preconditions are only at start or overall. Okay, so they do not, in the standard that they talked about, they didn't talk about preconditions at arbitrary points during the execution of the action. Although it's not a huge loss of expressiveness, because if you have such an action, you can split it into two different actions, potentially. Okay, but clearly, you only have preconditions, so you have overall preconditions. That is something different that we did not have before. Okay, so here is a precondition that must hold from the beginning of the action until the end of the action. Okay, and so that's the interval version. Effects can be at start or at end. So they can, you can have effects for the action at the beginning of the action or effects at the end. Yes, sir.
What's the difference if you don't have?
What do you mean? So, no, the issue is, actually we'll notice, I mean, I'm not sure whether I'm answering your exact question or not, but there is a connection between whether you will need parallel plans or not. That's related to whether the conditions are being given both at end and at the beginning.
But if you are not allowed parallel actions, then it doesn't matter, right?
There is no such thing as not being allowed to have parallel actions. I'm not saying any such thing. I mean, I'm going to define action semantics individually. Okay? And so a plan can have multiple actions being done together. Okay? But one of the interesting questions that we can ask ourselves is, as you are looking at this, you have to keep thinking that STRIPS actions must be a special case of this in some weird way. Okay? For example, one way you can think of them is as their actions are very small duration, epsilon duration actions. Okay, and now the question then would be some of the issues such as concurrency, how does that affect STRIPS action? Okay, and we'll talk about that in a minute. We'll get to that. Okay, so the effects are at start and at end, and then you can have, let me just actually, since I probably have to mention this, I guess, let me see, resources. Let me mention the resources because other slides may actually bring it up later on. So the resources, essentially, you can think of them as numeric quantities. Okay, so instead of multi-valued state fluents or Boolean state fluents, you can have numeric state fluents. Okay, now if you have a numeric state fluent, then an action might require a resource of a certain amount, and it might increment the resource afterwards. Okay, or it might release the resource afterwards. Okay, you already had in the past, Boolean resources could be modeled even in PDL. So if, for example, in the blocks world, hand in the blocks world is a kind of a resource. Okay, whenever an action is taking place, it would require the hand to be empty, and during the action, essentially that hand is not available. And after the action is over, the hand again becomes empty. Especially if you're dropping the bar, block down, okay? So one way of thinking about resources is, the main thing is essentially they will allow you to think in terms of numeric state variables too. Okay, planning in the context of numeric state variables. And then you can have actions updating a resource variable, or you can have actions incrementing it. Because it's actually a continuous quantity, you can add some amount. Okay. And then one interesting thing, of course, is the reason actually I should mention resources here is because in a while we'll talk about continuous effects, continuous change. And continuous change makes sense only in the context of continuous variables. Okay. So it's kind of useful to think in terms of resources too. But the simplest, so on PDL 2.1 allows numeric quantities, they can be present either in preconditions or in effects. Okay. And then the presence in the effects can be discrete. What else? One issue, of course, is the rate. If a resource is going to be changing over the duration of the action continuously, you might want to state that rate at which it is changing. In fact, there is an issue of how to handle resources, we'll talk about in a minute. When you have a duration for the action, you could say in the beginning, this much resource is required, at the end, this much resource will be available. In between, don't ask me anything about that resources amount. Okay? If you do that, then you don't have to talk about how the resource varies during the action's duration. But it turns out that makes planning easy, but it makes modeling harder. Okay? So we'll see that sometimes it's actually useful to talk about the change over the change of that resource over the duration of the action. In which case, how is it changing? It's like you specify the rate at which that resource is changing. Okay, and the question then will become, how is the rate specified? Is it a linearly varying or a non-linearly varying rate? Okay. Now here is an example. I mean, you've seen a lot more examples in the manual in the paper. This is one. Basically, this is a bird match and cross the cellar. That's it.
Why do I have those constraints in preconditions?
Which constraints?
Like saying they can only be
X1 or over. No. So remember that I said when you have durations, in essence, you have to talk about where are preconditions required to hold. They can be at points or over intervals. Okay, at start and overall, basically overall is over an interval, but the whole interval. Okay, at start is basically the beginning of the action. Okay, so yeah.
It might be like some
untrained time interval. Yes, the question is, yeah, I agree, that's true, but then what PDL 2.1 is doing is it's putting these restrictions. The question is, can you, if you have a domain where you really think that the duration of the precondition is required from the second unit after the action starts, unit 2 after the action starts up to action 4, can you not have then modeled that into a PDL 2.1 domain, where you would say this part up to the second unit is one action, this whole thing is one action, this other part is another action, and then the middle one does have an overall precondition. Do you understand what I'm saying? So they were going for sort of this is a standard. Somebody just made it up one day. And one of the interesting things that's been happening in the planning is there's been a lot of work in temporal planning for a long, long time, way before PDL 2.1 standard happened. Okay. The issue, of course, is everybody was using their own assumptions and their own languages. Okay. One thing that was a common platform now is the competition. Every year there's a competition for planners, and whoever is running the competition gets to decide the language. Okay, and then of course it's not that they just get to decide a buggy language. They have to, this particular thing, once Maria Fox and Derek Long decided a language and they wrote this paper, and in fact in the JAIR issue where that paper appeared, there were like 10 commentaries by people, other planning experts, who all said, what's all wrong with this particular standard? And why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do this? Okay. And it's just as interesting to read all those commentaries as it is to read this standard. Okay. Every standard has to make some decisions at the current point of time. And they didn't make everybody happy. Okay. Did that answer your question at all? Okay. Okay, so you have at start and at end effect. We are looking at this. So here is the bound match. You have a deterministic duration, 15 pre-specified duration. It's 15 units long. Condition, at start you must have match, and at start you must have strike pad, I believe. And then effect, at start you have light, at end you won't have light. Okay. That's basically what the burn match is saying, okay? And then durative action cross stellar, essentially it says at start you have light, overall you have light, okay? And then at start you are at the steps of the stellar, and then by the end you in the beginning, as the action starts, you're no longer at the steps. As soon as the action starts, you're no longer at the steps, you started walking. Okay, and by the and then you are at start, you started crossing, so your state has become not at steps but you are crossing. Okay, and then by the end you are at the fuse box. Okay, so that's how you're talking about. So you basically, the action has a duration. In the very beginning you're no longer at the steps, okay, and your state has become crossing, and then at the very end your state has become, you are at the fuse box. That's what this is saying, okay? And this is what you get to say in using the at start and overall effects. I mean at start and overall preconditions, and at start and at end effects. Okay. What? Yes, we didn't say anything. We haven't in this particular description, for example. See, remember that every model of the real world decides to abstract something. The question is, at what level do you abstract? Okay. Now, I could have written a version of this which doesn't even talk about durations of the action. You could have written it as a classical planning problem. Okay. Now, you would have ignored the durations there. So, you introduce the durations, you get up to this point, but you could still talk about, in fact, not only crossing, you have to talk about the rate of change of your position from the beginning of the action to the end of the action. Now that depends on when you are crossing the stellar, do you walk uniform with a uniform speed, or do you make a sprint, or do you start slow, speed up, and then reduce. All of these details I have decided not to model. Exactly, that's the question. So, in fact, we'll see in a minute that if you don't, with every decision comes, with every one of these compromises you make, you can make the planning easy, you can also make the modeling not as good. Okay, we'll look at it in a minute. No, I think they said that in the paper too. For example, whether or not you should model continuous change, and what are the advantages and what are the disadvantages. Okay, so, and then there is your a little plan for this particular problem. So, you know, you, as long as burn match is over the cross seller, you would have, the problem would have a correct solution. So this is required concurrency. So this, they must be concurrent. There's no way otherwise, because in this particular case, if these are the only two actions, you cannot do burn match and then do cross seller, because by that time the light is over. Okay, in fact, and then, so here is an example of durative actions with numeric quantities, but over discrete effects. So for example, here it's saying decrease energy by a certain amount. Okay, energy is a numeric variable, and you are decreasing it by the travel time and the use rate. But it's just one change, it's not a continuous rate. It's just, you know, at the start you decrease the energy, and then, you know, all the energy you're going to use for this entire action, you're going to take it up in the beginning itself. Okay. Now, if you have durative actions with continuous effects, in this case, for example, this is actually an interesting kind of an effect. It's, in some sense, it is an infinite sequence of effects at every point of time during the duration of the action. Okay. So what you're doing is you're talking about temperature of P is being increased at a certain rate, at a linear rate. So in a way, you can think of that as an overall effect, except it's an overall different effect. At each point, you know, you have a specific value for this. And this is actually a continuous change of this numeric quantity over the duration of the action. Okay? So that's also allowed in the language. Now, this is sort of related to what we were talking about earlier, issues in modeling. If you get, you can decide whether to model continuous change or not, and if you do have continuous change, then obviously it's harder to handle the action during the planning. But if you don't, then you will miss certain plans. Okay, so example here is essentially, so if you're boiling the pan of water, right, you can talk about the temperature at the beginning, and then you can talk about the temperature at the end of the action. Okay, that's one way. Okay, now that would be fine for many situations, as long as you really care about what happens to the water at the end. Okay, but if you also, so you can also talk about temperature of the water during the entire boiling time. Okay, so you provide essentially some sort of a rate at which the temperature is changing over the duration of the boiling action. Okay, now why would I want to do this? If I do this, one issue is that you cannot talk about, suppose if I want to boil the water faster, and I want to basically, not only I have put the pan on my stove, but I also take a blowtorch and start heating up the pan, so that will boil faster. Okay, I cannot model, I mean, you and I understand that if you do that, it should boil faster, right? But I can't model that if I've already decided to model the beginning and end temperatures alone, right? What changes is the speed at which the water boils, what reaches the boiling temperature. And the way it will become easier if you actually model the rate of change, in which case you can talk about whether if there are two actions which are both affecting the rates of change, then you can talk about if both of them are being done together, what would be the cumulative rate. And then you can add up if you want. One idea would be to add up the cumulative rate, and then you know you would be able to model the fact that the water would boil faster. Okay, so this is sort of pointing out the obvious that, you know, if there is continuous change and you're ignoring it, you would be losing some expressiveness. And but you ignore it because life will be easier in terms of planning. Okay, so if you compare STRIPS actions with preconditions and effects on one end, and the PDDL 2.1 actions with at start and overall preconditions, at end and at start effects, as well as these continuous change effects, increase, decrease with a rate kind of effects. This is a large distance in terms of expressiveness. You now are able to talk about many more processes. Okay. Now, you may not actually use all of these. So, in fact, many existing planners, there are very few existing planners, for example, that can handle continuous change, actions with continuous change, and make plans, even in the deterministic case. Okay. So, the language in this particular case is actually more expressive than the planners which can actually handle domains in that language as of now. In fact, we'll see that that the story is much worse. In fact, most of the domains as well as the planners are significantly smaller in their scope compared to what the language allows. Okay. But as you're seeing, one question of course is, if you go and read the JAIR issue that I can send you a link to, but in fact it's the same JAIR issue where this paper appeared, there are a bunch of commentaries by people as to what are the criticisms of this particular set of choices they made in representing the durative actions. And that's a good place to start as to what should have been done differently. Okay. Questions before we go forward? Okay. So the next thing is, of course, this is actually something that they talk about in the paper. If you have durative actions, is it one of the next several slides essentially is about how to connect this to classical planning in various ways. Okay. One idea is if you think of this as a durative action, in fact they talk about this kind of a compilation, which is you can think of a durative action in their case in terms of two instantaneous actions which are coupled by an invariant, what they call an invariant. Okay. And the basic idea is, so remember that you can only have overall preconditions and preconditions in the beginning and effects in the beginning as well as end. I also wrote preconditions at the end, which you can add, I think it doesn't really change too much. Okay. Although it's kind of weird to have actions which require preconditions at the end to complete. You know, what happens if you don't give them that precondition? I don't know, what are they going to do? But in this case, you can talk about this action as sort of two instantaneous actions, one which starts the action and then one which ends the action. So the beginning of the action, end of the action, and there is a coupling between them, which basically says that this overall precondition sort of has to hold between these two actions. Okay. Now, they called it invariant, but I mean what you already heard about in this class, you can think of that as sort of a interval preservation constraint. Sort of like a causal link, but we talked about something called interval preservation constraint in the refinement planning. So over this, you know, over this interval between this point and this point in the plan, there should not be any action that negates P0. Okay? And of course, you know, there is also the duration involved. You know, there is also, you know, having said this, you now have two points, but then if it's a deterministic durative action, then those two points must be separated by exact amount of distance in the temporal distance. But it is possible to think of doing planning with durative actions in this way, okay, in terms of beginning and the end with a coupling. Let's look at how we could talk about plans, you know, the representing plans when you have durative actions. Okay. So clearly, the minimum, the at the lowest level, what you really need for a plan is, you know, for each action, the exact time point at which it is started. That's what you need. Okay, so you can think of it as a dispatch. So for every action, so a plan is really, you know, action name, start time point, action name, start time point, action name, start time point, that's it. Okay. Now, of course, one interesting thing is that, so if you have that, so this is the minimum, but you could, just as you had, one of the advantages, one of the things you might do is, rather than search directly for a dispatch, you might search for a plan all of whose dispatches will be correct solutions. Okay? So just as instead of searching for a single action sequence, partial ordered planners searched for a set of constraints on a plan such that, you know, any action sequence, any topological sort of that partially ordered plan is a solution. Okay? So you could also do that. So you could consider looking for, you could consider a representation that's above the dispatch representation. Okay? And to do that, basically what you need is the constraints that are required to hold in terms of between the start times of the action. Okay? And here is actually one such constraint. So I'm saying A1, 4, 5, A2. All that says is A1, the start of A2 minus start of A1, which is two real numbers in the time axis, okay, must be greater than 4 and less than 5. That's what that constraint says. Okay, so in a way, this is the generalization of the precedence constraint in partial order planning. This is a sort of a precedence constraint. A1 precedes A2. Except the precedence constraint is much more stricter now. It says not only does A1 precede A2, it precedes it such that it's either 4 or 5 units difference between the start points. And I don't have to talk about endpoints because once I give the start points, I know the endpoints for the action. Okay? And this is interesting because we could potentially generate planners. Like, for example, if you were to extend a partial order planner to deal with durative actions, then essentially it would come up with a plan which will look like this. It has a bunch of actions with these kinds of constraints between them, precedence constraints between them. And in fact, I don't have this here, but let me see if I can show you. It turns out that if you have a set of such constraints, past it. Yeah. If you have a set of such constraints on a bunch of actions, remember if you have a set of precedence constraints on a bunch of actions, every topological sort on those actions is an action sequence, that's a solution. Okay. Now, if you have a set of these kinds of constraints, which restrict the start and end time, start time points of pairs of actions, then you can also ask the question, you know, what are all the valid dispatches for this? Okay. And secondly, whether in fact there are valid dispatches for this plan. Okay. And it turns out that in itself is an interesting constraint satisfaction problem. Just as finding topological sorts, checking whether or not a set of precedence constraints are consistent is a simple, you know, constraint satisfaction problem. It's a very simple one. Okay? If you throw in disjunctive ordering constraints, checking whether it is consistent or not becomes an NP-hard problem. Okay. Now, here is an interesting thing. If I have, this is the direct extension of conjunctive ordering constraints. That means only one ordering between any two time points, except that order, that the distance is being forced to be in an interval. If you only have one interval for each of the two each of the pairs of actions, that would become essentially very similar to your normal conjunctive precedence constraints. And this is actually called a simple temporal STP, simple temporal problem. What? Yeah. So, and it turns out that it can be solved in polynomial time. Yes?
So are these
the same as temporal methods? Yes. That's the reason I brought this up. We will get back to this little later, but I'm just bringing it up because if you were to think in terms of representations for temporal plans that are like partially ordered plans, such that just as in every topological sort of a partially ordered plan was supposed to be a solution, similarly, every dispatch consistent with a simple temporal network, STN, I'm sorry, I'm calling it STP, but STN, simple temporal network will be a solution. Okay, the question of course would be, is the STN that I have in front of me, is that consistent? And also what are the valid dispatches? You will never write down all the dispatches, because assume if you have dense time, then you have infinite, potentially infinite number of dispatches, all of which are legal. Okay, but what is important is that actually now you're able to consider, you know, all those infinite number of dispatches in one plan. Okay, and what you're interested in is whether in fact it exists, if it is already inconsistent, in which case it's actually zero number of dispatches left. Okay, and having said this, just as disjunctive orderings in partial order planning would have made consistency problem NP hard, right? The disjunctive orderings here would essentially be disjunction over the intervals. So you would say T0 is either 720 or 15, I mean either 720 or 3245 over T2. Which means either this or another inequality. Okay? And that's called a disjunctive temporal problems, disjunctive temporal networks. And those are NP-hard to solve. Okay? Now, one of the interesting things is simple temporal networks and disjunctive temporal networks wind up being useful if somebody already made the plan and all you need to do is schedule it, which is actually an interesting point in itself, because we never talked about the difference between planning and scheduling, unless the first class Menkes talked about it potentially. But planning and scheduling, the one difference is if I come up with a plan, as far as I'm concerned, that would work. That means any potential dispatch of it is legal. That would satisfy all my goals. Then the question would be for you to, and then it can be scheduled in such a way that any one of those dispatches are picked during the actual execution. Okay. Now if I have a plan here and another plan and a different plan, and all of them are going to be scheduled centrally, then you essentially are going to be picking dispatches for all of these. Okay. And so you would be reasoning directly with the simple temporal networks or disjunctive temporal networks. So scheduling would be just looking at the temporal networks directly. And planning would look at the temporal networks as part of the planning problem. You know, in the sense, if the set of constraints that you have introduced till now are already inconsistent. Okay? So that's the representation issue of the plan. Okay. And then the problems, you know, obviously problems can have everything that you can model in the context of these durative actions. So for example, I can have goals specified as essentially a literal that must hold at a time point. Okay, where PI must hold by the time TI, and then so TI then becomes a deadline for that goal. So that's the way you can handle a deadline goal. And then if I don't mention any deadline, then by default it must be true by the end of the plan. So it's the normal goals will become deadline goals where the deadline is the end of the plan. Okay. The other thing is you can also talk about persist goals, which is again a certain condition must hold over an interval of time. Okay. Again, remember that goals are connected to effects and preconditions. Okay, so if you are basically the persist goal would be an overall precondition for the that needs to be satisfied by somebody's effects. Okay. So one interesting question, in fact, if you have these kind of persist goals, one thing that we will talk about later is what exactly are the semantics of the persist goal. Okay, so if something must persist from, so for example, if I require that I should have in the crossing the garage, crossing the cellar scenario, suppose it's a really long cellar, okay, and you strike a match, right, you strike a match and then it's only going to get you to midway to the cellar, or maybe one third of the way to the cellar. But you need light all the way until you reach. So then how do you make, what would you do normally if you have just a box of matches and you need to walk? So you strike a match, walk for a while, then you strike another match, walk for a while. Okay, so in essence, one single goal which said there must be light from the beginning to the end is now split into intervals, sub-intervals, such that different actions are making it true over different intervals. Okay, that is also possible. So in some sense, it turns out when you have interval goals, you can reduce the goal into sub-intervals and farm it out to different sub-goals. Okay, that's something that actually, you know, makes sense in a durative, when you have this kind of duration. Okay, the other thing is plan quality. How would you measure the quality of plans? As we already talked about, you can have make span, which is one thing. You can also talk about cost, which is just the cost of actions, you know, cumulative cost of actions, which is like directly from the previous discussion in the classical planning. In fact, you know, you can also have other kinds of, once you talk about make span, you can also have other types of measures of a plan, such as slack in the plan. Okay, given two plans that have the same make span and the same cost, you may still prefer one over the other because one has more slack, for example. Okay, the slack essentially involves, you know, the slack essentially means that there are some critical actions, there is a time when this action ends and the next action doesn't have to start right after that. Okay, you can make your quality dependent on that. You do this when you do travel plans. You don't like very short connections, right? I mean, you know, when you avoid very short connections, then essentially what you're doing is you are, you know, providing, you're giving higher quality to plants with more slack. Okay, so these are the things that you would be interested in. Now, one interesting issue is, even if you think of make span and cost, it's worth noting that unlike classical plants, here now you have multiple objectives as to what makes a plan good. There's make span and there's cost. Now, if I give you two plans, one has higher make span and lower cost, another has lower make span and higher cost, which is better? Okay. In general, that basically means if you have multiple objectives, it becomes a multi-objective problem, multi-object optimization problem, and you can either combine them into a single objective by multiplying this by alpha and that by 1 minus alpha and combining them, or you can do Pareto sets. That means look for all non-dominated solutions. Okay, so the point is, from the point of optimization, temporal planning makes you think of multi-objective optimization. Okay, classical planning does not by itself make you think of multi-objective optimization. But the partial satisfaction planning that we talked about already makes you think of multi-objective optimization, in the sense of, if you were to separate utility into one set of units and action cost into a different set of units, you know, you combine them, you previously combined them by saying they're all in the same dollar unit. So you can add up the utilities, subtract the cost, and you get one single measure. If they are incomparable units, then they're two different objectives, and you also would do multi-objectives there. But, you know, again, in fact, you can also, one of the other interesting things is, you know, in the context of temporal planning, you can also talk about partial satisfaction planning in the case of temporal planning. And it makes it more interesting, because if you have a deadline goal, I can say that, you know, what you like, which is, I can say that it's a soft deadline. That's what everybody wants, you know, which is, if you submit it by this time, you get these many, I mean, full points. If not, you would then have, you know, penalties. That's like a soft deadline. Or a hard deadline, which is, if you submit it by this point, you get the utility. If not, you'll get zero. Okay? So soft deadlines are partial satisfaction planning in the context of temporal planning. And similarly, if you have numeric goals in this context, you can have, again, partial satisfaction of the numeric goals too. Instead of getting me $10,000, get me some part of it. and that will have a utility. Okay, I won't directly talk about partial satisfaction planning issues in temporal planning, but you know that's possible to talk about. Okay, any questions? Okay, so the next couple of things that I'll do today is essentially connect this whole issue of durative actions back to classical planning and talk about this notion of concurrency, okay, which is sort of an important issue. So let's just look at it from, so what is a concurrent plan? So you'd say in a plan with durative actions, you would say that the plan is concurrent. So you would say two actions are concurrent if their execution times overlap. Right? That's simple enough. Okay? And then, now a plan is concurrent if it contains at least a pair of actions that are concurrent. Okay? And then a problem may have multiple plans to solve it. Okay? Some plans might be concurrent, some might be not concurrent. Okay. Now I will say that a problem requires concurrency if every solution for that problem requires every solution plan for that problem is a concurrent plan. That means it's not an efficiency issue anymore. It's not just an optimality issue. To solve the problem, you need to be able to consider actions being executed parallelly. Okay, parallelism is not just an optimality issue. So that's the required concurrency for the problem. And then you can talk about a domain. A domain is a set of problems, and a domain requires concurrency if it contains at least one problem that requires concurrency. Okay, simple enough, right? So one distinguishing feature of temporal planning domains is that you could actually write domains in PDDL 2.1, and in general you can write domains in temporal planning which require concurrency. This should not be surprising to you, but it was something that you could not do in classical planning. Because that's why in classical planning, the solutions are always sequences of actions. Okay? Whereas in temporal planning, the solutions are dispatches. Dispatches basically are action start time. Action name start time. Action name start time. And that allows potential parallelism between actions. Okay. Now, having said this, one of the interesting things that can be a background in the discussion that as we go on is that in the current most of the planners, several of the planners that we'll discuss in the class, because they are actually existing planners, they've been implemented and they've taken part in the planning competitions and temporal planning track. They actually cannot solve. Theoretically, they are incapable of solving all domains which require concurrency. So that means that those planners, their search spaces don't contain solutions for problems that require concurrency. You know, remember, completeness is a for all property. So all I need to show you is there exists one problem that this planner cannot solve. Even though it can be written in the language it accepts, it fails to find the solution. Yes?
My question here is that, I mean, I can change the model, the way I model the problem, so it's not.
Yes. That's
I
true.
Don't really need concurrency at all.
So if you do not need concurrency at all, then why do we talk about durative actions?
Because it's much easier to model it. Because if I, for example, have the domain with the seller and the match, if I don't want the equivalent to the material, I have to discretize and cut the.
That's actually, it is a good point. In fact, these part of these slides, I'll show you that, for example, there are temporal planning languages which essentially upfront, whether they realized it or not, they were not going to be able to, even represent problems that require concurrency. Okay, and so most of them, they don't even do it for your version. They mostly do it for just make span minimization. You can talk about duration minimization. Okay, two issues. Issue one, I think if you have continuous change, it's no longer just, it's not possible to talk about plans which we, I mean, that to completely rule out plans without concurrency. So for example, you know, both of us lift this table. You know, I mean, I guess not you, maybe one of the smaller kids and me try to lift this table, okay? Neither of us are able to lift the table alone. Both of us together can lift the table. You can't even model that in any, you know, if you completely abstract it and say, essentially, table gets lifted, it's one thing. But here is a situation where, you know, both of us are trying to lift the table and both of us have to work together to lift the table.
I can model it. That's
how would... Actually, this is a very good question, because as you can see, and from his comments, you know, there is obviously this is stuff that we have done. So you know, there are questions, and you know, one of the questions is how important is required concurrency. It is actually important. It's surprising that most of the planners can't solve, and they did not actually realize that they can't solve problems requiring concurrency. Now, you may well be right that, I mean, that's not an argument that we made very cleanly in the papers as yet, as to whether or not everything that can be modeled without requiring concurrency. But in fact, there's also an issue as to whether or not everything that can be modeled in Scripps language itself. It's all a question of how far you want to abstract. Right. So each of these things that we are adding, there's a question of, you know, should we even, you know, consider duration? Why not just try to get by with strips, and how far can you get? Okay. But anyway, it's interesting that some of the, you know, several of the planners that we will discuss, which actually won the competition, can't solve problems which require concurrency. That means, in fact, the actions have to be concurrent. It's not that they will never be able to find plans that are parallel. You can always find plans that are parallel or concurrent by first finding a sequential plan and post-processing it such that it becomes concurrent. Do you understand what I'm saying? So in fact, this is an important difference. You know, you could have, you know, if you really, really just wanted a partially ordered plan, okay, you can always run FF, come up with a plan, and then, you know, remove the unnecessary ordering, which is not that hard. Okay, and then you will get a partially ordered plan. Okay, the issue, of course, is what if in fact there is no sequential, that requires that for every problem that is solvable, there is a sequential solution. And so then you can start with that and remove unnecessary ordering. If in fact in the model that I gave you, there are problems which don't have sequential solutions at all, then you are stuck. Of course, you know, the point that Juraj makes is still right, I'm still valid, in the sense maybe you could have come up with a different domain description of this domain altogether, which doesn't require concurrency. But as I said, the question is whether it will require duration even. You know, how far can you abstract? Okay. Another interesting factoid, I guess, is most of the benchmark domains that were developed in the competition that were used don't actually require concurrency, interestingly. Okay, so that means so you have essentially so what this actually meant is if you know this for sure upfront, in a way you can do temporal planning almost as syntactic sugar. So you can in essence do classical planning, do post-processing to make parallel plans, which is fine. Okay, I'm not saying that that's not necessarily a reasonable way to generate plans, but it reduces the distinction between temporal planning versus non-temporal planning. Okay, that's one point. The other thing is having, you know, looking at Scripps actions from the point of view of these durative actions, PDL 2.1, okay? No, but that he could say that. He could say that that's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
Right. I think a bigger bug. It is interesting. No, but actually, a more interesting bug is less than it's not, cannot be seen as a feature. Is that matchbox, the matchstick problem, is the one that's in the manual that you read. It's in the paper, and the winner of the temporal planning competition cannot solve it. You know, which sort of at least makes it, you know, it's one interesting thing is at least the guys who are, you know, generating these languages haven't actually, I mean, so they thought that required concurrency is a reasonable thing to have, and yet, you know, planners can't solve it. There is a very interesting discussions to be had, for the interest of full disclosure, okay. So Karthik is also involved in this work, and he has been trying to write benchmarks, large benchmarks with required concurrency. And in general, writing benchmarks is hard. I mean, I've looked at the domains that you guys made. Some of you made nice domains. Some of you basically made versions of LoxWorld. It's hard enough to write benchmark domains. But, you know, writing domains which require concurrency and which existing planners, you know, it turns out that the planners that failed to be complete for, you know, this kind of concurrent problems, it's not that, so for example, one particular class of planners we look at are an extension of progression planners called decision epoch planners. And we look at that, and they do generate some concurrent plans. But you can always make problems that they can't solve. And it turns out that making problems that are, you know, not solvable by easy variations of those planners is not all that easy. Okay? Which could make it worth wondering whether or not, if it's hard to find those kinds of domains, then maybe it's not a problem, you know, that you're just trying to solve one itself. Okay? So we'll say that. But keep this in mind, and then the other thing, the two more things, and then you get to go home. The other thing is for the strips, talking about this, concurrency. We sort of got into this whole discussion thinking basically strips actions are instantaneous. Okay, you could also think of them, and in fact, there may be reasons to say this is a right, better view from just physics point of view. Okay, that they cannot be any instantaneous change. That all the actions have basically epsilon duration. Okay. Now the question, of course, then is if there is a duration, then there is a beginning and end to the duration. So how do you make sure that it's not the full temporal planning? And one way it is that if you think of all the strips preconditions to be overall preconditions, and all the strips effects to be at end effects, that means preconditions must hold over all the epsilon duration, and effects must hold, will be, you know, put at the end. Then you would essentially get exact semantics, you know, in most cases of what strips plans do. And it also shows that you can also say that if you have all your actions have epsilon duration and they have overall preconditions and at and post conditions, then you will never be able to even write domains in such a language that will require concurrency. Okay? In fact, it turns out that the epsilon is less important. Okay? You can have non-uniform durations for the actions. As long as all their preconditions are overall and their effects are only at the end, then you will never be able to write domains which require concurrency. And whenever I'm saying that, you know, the crossing the cell R is a domain that you can't write in this language. Okay? Now, of course, all I'm saying is this in these kinds of languages, you can't write a domain that will require concurrency for correctness point of view. Okay, but you can still come up with a sequential plan and then post-process it to minimize its make span. Okay, reduce its make span. And then it turns out, both these points, this point here and this kind of actions, you can think of, so you can think of, this slide basically makes you think of strips actions as a special case of PDL 2.1 actions, where they all have epsilon durations and they have only overall preconditions and at-end effects. Okay? And then there is a planner called temporal graph plan, TGP, which came up with a set of its own. I mean, it was done before PDL 2.1, you know, standard was made, and they essentially came up with an action representation which is sort of overall preconditions and at-end effects. Durations can be non-uniform, and it's a nice little planner. You know, you can still talk about, you know, make span minimization, etc. But it turns out that in that language, you really cannot write domains which require concurrency, if that is one of the issues. And then both of them wind up being a special cases of this one simple point, which is if you have a durative action, okay, when is the duration just a syntactic sugar? And when is it really part of the problem? And it turns out, think about the following thing. If I have a big action, and there is a single point in this action where everything I need is being taken and everything I give is being given, then really this extra bulk of my the length, it does not change the correctness of the plan. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if for every action there exists a point, a single point where everything that that action requires will be needed at that point, and everything that that action gives will be given at that point, then I would say that this action does not have temporal gap. That means there is one point where everything is needed and everything is given. Okay? Now, if your actions in your domain are all such that none of them have temporal gap, then you can basically show that you cannot model domains which require concurrency with those actions. And it's easy enough to see that TGP style actions don't have temporal gaps, because remember, they require their preconditions to hold over the entire duration of the action. So that means they also must hold at the end, and at the end all the effects are also given. So there exists one point where everything is taking place. Now, this one question now, when did you hear about something like this in this class? Whoever other than Will Cushing and Karthik, if you answer it, you got a bonus. Serious. When did you hear? What? No. When did you hear something like this, where everything being taken is being taken at one point, at the same point, everything being given is also being given? Okay, you get a bonus. Unique main sub-action restriction. Okay, and it's interesting that, remember, in the HTN schemas, if you know, a non-primitive action takes things, gives things out, but when you reduce it, it becomes multiple time points, really. Even if you have instantaneous action semantics, a non-primitive action is not really instantaneous. At the lower level, it becomes multiple time points. The question then is, if everything that it's taking is being taken by different points, and everything it's giving is given at different points, we saw that that's more complex. In fact, for example, I mean, in that particular case, what we found is, then in those cases, you could have a plan which has interactions at the high level that cannot be resolved, and yet you can't give up on that plan because at lower level they can be resolved. And we said if it has unique main sub-action restriction, which essentially means there exists, every reduction is such that one single action takes all the needs and gives all the adds, then you continue to have no temporal gap in essence. And that sort of winds up being also related in this case, that if basically in that case, duration is just syntactic sugar. Everything important is happening at a single point. There is no real, and you know, this should not be surprising to you, because we started from what temporal planning could be, and we talked about PDL 2.1, where you can have effects all over the place. Before even we talked about PDL 2.1, we talked about effects can occur any place, and preconditions can be required at any place, including over duration. And then talked about PDL 2.1, which makes minor restrictions on that. But then, from there to here, it's a pretty strong restriction. You're saying only certain types of preconditions are allowed, only overall preconditions. Okay, again, it's a good point to keep in mind as to, you know, every kind of a representational restriction could be seen as a bug or a feature, okay? It's a bug in the sense that certain things cannot be modeled well. But it could be a feature in the sense with the restriction, it will be easier to handle, you know, problems in that language. Okay. And so it's sort of more important to figure out the trade-offs in, you know, in terms of the representation. So what I'll try to do next class is to talk to you with a straight face about the current existing temporal planners that can try to solve problems represented in PDL 2.1. Mostly we will talk in terms of how to extend progression, regression, and classic, you know, partial order planners. It turns out that the obviously clever ways of, you know, extending, it turns out the easiest thing to extend is partial order planner. Okay? Especially if you kind of realize that you can think of actions as the begin action, end action with the interval preservation constraint, you can actually almost think of how you can change a UCPOP style planner to work with that. Okay? What would be more interesting is how to make this work also for progression and regression style search. That's what we'll talk about. Okay? Thanks.